Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 1, The Stargazer, is over, but we are just getting started here on Post-Show Recaps as we're back to talk more Star Trek. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here, sitting on a different ship, but still in a similar position as we are transitioning from Star Trek Discovery to Star Trek Picard, which is still sort of airing at the same time. These ships are running side by side, but there's a lot going on in the world of live action Star Trek. We are here to recap the premiere episode of the highly anticipated season 2 of Star Trek Picard. We're going to give our thoughts as to the episode overall, what it might mean for season 2, etc. Of course, I am not alone here. I am joined by my co-captain here on all things Star Trek, someone who I would say I am definitely the Q to their Picard as of late, given the number of outfits I have shown up on with podcasts with her, Jessica Lees. Jess, how are you?
I'm good, Mike. You know, if you are five holograms consolidated into one, you know you have to tell me, right?
Yeah, I got the tattoo and everything. That's my lone representation is. All right, my forms emerge, though I fear any other forms of me exist out there, because I think that's just too much chaos for the world to experience.
Yeah, fear the Mega Bloom.
Oh, very much so. All right, so Star Trek Picard, it's here, had, you know, a big coming out season in 2020, the highly anticipated return of Jean-Luc Picard, of Patrick Stewart, in a very different fashion than I think any of us had expected. Now he is back for season 2. Really interesting initial approach to this season, in my opinion. We know where it is going eventually, right? We know the promotional materials that there would be some time travel involved, a la Star Trek 4, of going back in time, maybe not as far as that, but certainly to our own time. Has not necessarily happened yet, but I will say from some of the stuff that was set up in this first episode, we are really laying the runway for that eventual takeoff. I'm sure we're going to have a lot to say about this episode in detail, but generally, overall, Jess, your thoughts on the return of Jean-Luc Picard and Picard the show proper?
I am excited. I think I'm happy to have the show back. I feel like there are some questionable choices we made to set this all up. And I'll leave it there. As we get into them, we can talk more about where each character has started the season. But there's a lot of yada-yada-ing that I find very, very interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll be so blunt. Not only do I completely agree, Jess, I think Star Trek Picard Season 2 is doing the full Ghostbusters 2. I think we're doing a little bit of sequelitis here, where I think a lot of stuff that was set up in really the final scene slash shot of Season 1 that we talked about at the end of our Picard Season 1 coverage sort of got disappeared or obfuscated, and the question is, is part of that because, like, afterwards they looked at it and said, okay, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Is it audience response? Is it just, again, a la Ghostbusters 2? Well, we have to create drama, so we're going to have to essentially wipe out all the relationships that we made at the end of season one, or maybe create new ones. I'm not entirely sure. We'll certainly get into it, though, because I agree that was something definitively that I did notice. I mean, we're going to take a much larger time jump, is the onus of season two, but took a fairly large time jump here. I believe in the dialogue between Picard and Laris, the first of many, they allude to the fact that I believe a year and a half has passed since at least the death of Shaban, who was the other Romulan vineyard worker. So it's been at least that amount of time since the end of Star Trek Picard season one. Fairly sizable time jump, especially compared to a lot of other Star Trek series. So to your point, Jess, it feels like we sort of got back in there of, okay, here's everything that happened, and everything that happened was kind of a cultural reset of Star Trek Picard, in a manner of speaking.
I mean, in other words, everyone's in Starfleet. Everything is cool in the military.
There we go. That's that propaganda that we love so much.
Yep. I guess it was disappointing to me that we're all, like, we spent season one of Picard saying, like, maybe this is not the utopia that we thought it was, and there's a lot of problems within that we need to unpack and consider, and they don't always make the right decisions. And then they start this season like, JK, LOL, everybody's Starfleet, and it's all good.
Yeah, it's a really interesting choice, and maybe part of it is, again, to set up these circumstances. Now, look, I also believe we're going to get a little bit of, speaking of another time travel pop culture paradigm, flashpoint a bit, where we'll get into the speculation. My hunch is that Picard, we're going to have some time travel alternate universe stuff where maybe one of the reasons why they set up these more stringent things is to then view, okay, this is what they're like now, right? You know, Seven mm-hmm. of Nine is part of the Fenris Ranger, sort of like Robin Hooding it. What happens now when she's just Annika and she doesn't have the implant? I could see that as the rationale behind why they're setting it up. But I agree, it was an interesting choice. And not to say overall I didn't like the episode. Like, I just very much enjoy getting to sit back down with these characters. Not even just Picard proper. But I do feel like season one set up some really interesting people overall. To your point, I don't love the idea of... I could understand why Raffi gets reinstituted in Starfleet. I don't know if Elnor necessarily needs to become a part of it. You know, I think that Rios becoming a Starfleet captain is certainly interesting in its own right. Would have been nice to see the transition there. Though I do wonder if, again, this is more so a means to an end of let's see where they are now so that when we go see this alternate universe version of them or whatever we're going to be experiencing over the season, it is starkly different from the reds, yellows, and blues and comm badges of Starfleet.
I mean, I got to be honest, this feels like we're already in the alternate universe. Because we didn't really talk much about why did you come back to this thing that you were railing against before? And we did a lot of, like, even at the very end of last season, they said, oh, Picard is an android now, but it's all cool because androids are legal now. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's just go do our thing. And I thought, the much more interesting choice would be, what if he's outside the law now? And they didn't go there. And now they're doubling down on that. And they're saying, you know, none of these people are outside the law anymore. They're all going straight. And they, for most of them, they didn't explain why or how. They just assume that you're going to be cool with it.
That's a very good point, right? That the last shot of season one is the infamous engage with La Serena going off to the vast unknown. And like you mentioned before, we had a lot of fun discussion as to, okay, could this be one of the first Star Trek series to not have Starfleet front and center? Maybe besides like Disco Season 3 when Starfleet is in shambles, right? Could this be an opportunity to explore the Outer Rim in a manner of speaking to invoke another sci-fi franchise of more of the lawlessness that does not exist around Starfleet? And again, at the moment, we aren't necessarily there, right? Picard has his admiralty reinstated. Raffi's back. You know, Rios is a captain. Even, you know, Soji seems to be some sort of diplomat. Even Agnes Girardi, who flat out murdered her boyfriend, is like, nope, I basically pled insanity and I'm good with it now. It's one of those things to me where, much like, you know, a positronic brain, when you look at it just kind of blurring your eyes and from a macro perspective, it's still fun. You're still having a good time being reintroduced to these characters. But the more you look at the circuits and the wires, you're like, oh yeah, there's a lot that we kind of broad brushed over that happened over the course of season one.
Yeah, it feels like a hard reset because I think we said last season that one of the things we liked about this season is that it was a chance to look at what is everybody doing if they're not in Starfleet? And what is the world like if you don't have to wear the same thing every day and you don't have to go to work on a spaceship? What do you do? And now it's like they thought about it for a little bit and they said, it's too hard to think about that. I'm just going to go back to the things we know that we're comfortable with. And we'll let Seven of Nine be a little bit outside the law and outside of Starfleet because one person can be, but the whole cast can't.
Yeah. Well, that being said, I will, you know, again, caution this by saying I don't think we're going to spend much time there. Again, if what's, let's believe in it, specifically the way that things ended, right? Like you sort of mentioned, it almost seems like at this moment we blew up the timeline. And I think theoretically those characters are dead in that timeline until we get the Q shenanigans, right? Where he's going to say, okay, now you can rewind and allow yourselves to live out this encounter with the Borg Queen. But it's interesting because, again, this shows that happily ever after does end unhappily. I think what might work easiest for this is if we sort of go through our main cast of characters and do our sort of Animal House-esque where are they now at the beginning of season two and then talk about the Q of it all and how that essentially is all going to get entirely erased as we move into something completely different.
Yep, that sounds good to me.
Well, let's start with Jean-Luc proper because... yeah, you know, it seems like while he is an admiral, he has maybe been able to negotiate, okay, I still want to go back to my vineyard, right? This is the closeout of a season. And while he's stomping grapes, he might be stomping some hearts as well. This was one of the odder points of the episode for me. Admittedly, Jess, we got to talk about Picard and Laris here. Are you shipping this and all the ships that we have going on here being sucked into this anomaly? Are you shipping this one?
No, I'm like, I'm going to like sap all the power out of it and then blow it up. This is really weird because you almost looked at Laris as one character with her husband last mm-hmm. season. It's like, these are, you know, this is the Romulan couple that lives here. And now it's almost like, oh, well, we want Picard to not have to be shipped with anybody. So let's just give him a single woman and throw her at him so he can reject her. But, oh, she has a husband. Oh, he died. Don't worry about it. They talk about it. They've done so much explaining with one line of dialogue. And, you know, here on post-show recaps, we sometimes value that. We treasure it. Like mm-hmm, Chappelle mm-hmm. is constantly saying about The Walking Dead, this could have been an email. This could have been an email. There are too many emails on Star Trek Picard. This is just like, oh, open my email box. Yeah, Picard's staff is dead. And, okay, I'll admit it. I cannot remember his name off the top of my head. What is dead Romulan dude's name?
Oh, Shaban.
Shaban, yes. Shaban is dead. Laris is a free agent. And that's all they said. Like, we don't know why. We don't know how. We don't know, you know, how she feels about it. And then we just like, oh, she's actually secretly in love with Picard. And this is an interesting turn of character for him as well, because we've explored this with Picard at a few points. And of course, I'm sure the first thing you thought of when they start having this conversation of why didn't you ever settle down and have a family, you think of him in the Nexus, of course.
Of course, yeah. I was like, well, there was that one time, actually, where I lived out. Listen, let me play the flute for you, and I'll regale you with a story about it.
Well, there's that, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Interlight, the Nexus.
Exactly. Like, all these fictional universes that he's lived, like, ages in. Not to mention, like, the 500-pound elephant in the room is the Beverly Crusher of it all, is it not? When we start talking about, like, we'll talk about the Guinan conversation later, but, like, I've never, you know, had my heart for somebody because I've always looked to the stars. It's like, yeah, we've kind of been telling that tale for 7 seasons on TNG with Beverly Crusher.
Yeah, there is that. And I would imagine we're never going to see Gates McFadden gracing us with her presence on this show.
I would imagine not. It's weird, though, because I believe there's been questions about it, right? There was a lot to do around season 1 around, like, where's LeVar Burton? Where's Michael Dorn? You know, they visited the set. Obviously, we're going to talk about Whoopi Goldberg essentially getting to be able to come on by Patrick Stewart just appearing on The View and be like, you're going to be back on Star Trek now. But yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, I guess in all good things, right, the impetus behind that future timeline was that they had been married and it didn't work out. I don't know if that makes Picard, you know, because that timeline does get erased with everything. I don't know if that makes him feel like, well, I may never be, so maybe I shouldn't pursue things with Beverly, but it is a little odd, because I do think when we're specifically focusing an episode on Picard's relationships and his inability to love or what have you, I mean, that was one of the main cruxes of the character with that specific romantic relationship.
Yeah, it's strange that you didn't really spend a lot of time in Picard's heart for mm-hmm. 7 seasons, except just like hinting that he might and then pulling it away.
And also when he got literally stabbed through the heart by the Nausicaan, that's probably the most time we've spent with his heart.
That too. Yes. And then at the end of the series, hinting that he might do it and like, oh no, he didn't. It's okay. Will they or won't they? They won't. It's fine. To have that be such an integral part of like what you thought was going to happen for him, and then not to bring her on. I mean, she's over at Prodigy. She could come on.
Mm.
Like, you know, Crusher's not out of the universe entirely. It is strange to me that we're just going to go in this totally different direction.
Now, that being said, you know, say what you want to about the dialogue. I thought Patrick Stewart and Orla Brady did a good job, like, in their scenes together. Mm-hmm. Especially the first one, right? Which, again, seemed more congenial than anything that, like, When they start leaning in for a kiss, I'm like, wait, what? What are we doing here exactly? Because like you said, since we didn't necessarily have that period to grieve, I could see something in the writer's room where they're like, all right, what's a proper time period that can pass to not make this feel too weird that Picard essentially starts kindling a romance with the widow of one of his closest friends and, you know, staff members? A year and a half? I think that should be fine. And they throw in the line, too, about, like, well, Romulans take on many lovers, even after, you know, their closest husbands and wives die. Again, I'm happy that we're sort of getting away from it, not to, like, say, okay, let's keep throwing Laris in the backseat like we do this entire show. But it just, it sort of came out of nowhere for me. It doesn't particularly feel necessary because, like you said, if it's a bridge we've trodden across many, many times before, maybe it'll come to more prominence later on and he does take the opportunity to get with her later on in the show. But I thought the actors made the best with this storyline that was surprising at the very least.
Yeah, I have no quibbles with how the actors handled their situation. I just think we've closed the book on what Picard does in this arena. The only thing I can think of that would be worse than how they handled it here is if we just come back and they were boning.
Yeah. It was like, like post-coitus, like, he just like rolls over.
Yeah, or like he, you know, he wakes up in the morning, she's like bringing him coffee and then, or bringing him the tea Earl Grey hot, and then they like kiss passionately and you're like, wait, but what about the other guy? And then they're like, oh yeah, it's been very sad since Siobhan died, but now we're together and I feel healed. I've seen shows do that. It's not good. I don't like it when you come back and they're in a relationship and you haven't explained anything. But it's, I think they wouldn't bring this up now if they're not going to have him pivot on his stance sometime over the course of the season. Like, there's someone out there. I don't know if it's Laris. I would guess it's probably not Laris. I think he kind of shut that down with a quickness. Someone is out there. Picard's going to get some this season. That's my prediction.
Put that in the book. Picard is going to get some nookie in Star Trek Picard season 2. Well, listen, I think let's continue on the shipping perspective and break down these characters by the pairings that used to exist and no longer do. So let's start with Jurati and Rios, because this was one that apparently did not seem very amicable, or at least like the last time that they had spoken before this episode was an I never want to see you again, which is not very good. Luckily, there is an entire universe that they can explore without running into each other in the same circles. But so we know the Rios thing, obviously, like he was able to get back into Starfleet, was able to take the captain route, is now working on the Stargazer, which I really enjoyed. Listen, I know you have said once upon a time, Jess, that Picard maybe has more fan service than even Lower Decks, and I just got freaking giddy when we saw that exterior of the Stargazer. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it's nice that they're calling back to that. Like, this is a very... And I love this, that the show does this in such a way that you don't have to be the deep nerd. You can enjoy it. Like, Lower Decks doesn't have much for people that aren't into Star Trek. Mm-hmm. But I said it a lot last season. Picard could be the first show you watch out of the entire Star Trek franchise and you wouldn't feel lost. But it could also be the eighth show you watch in the Star Trek franchise and you could be deep into the mythology and you still, there's still surprising fun things. And this is definitely one of those surprising fun things that they don't have to clobber you over the head with it either.
No. I mean, it's really simple, and I love the title in general is incredible. You know, going back to Picard for a second, something I really did appreciate, I love that flashback scene for many reasons, where we get to see, you know, a more, more like colloquial or sort of like modern day version of Picard, right? Which is still back in the 2300s, but still relatively closer to what our life is. Hanging out, you know, talking to his mom. His relationship with his mother, I feel like, is something we didn't touch upon a lot in the series. We didn't know much about his family with the exception of that episode, Brothers, where he goes to visit Robert and his family, and that's when everything comes out with blood and mud and everything. But I really appreciated that ability, that as ham-fisted as it was of, like, why do you look to the stars, Jean-Luc? To get the origin story, essentially, of, like, him looking to escape a pretty dark life into the darkness and void of space, I think really shines a light on the character. And like you said, Jess, if you're talking about like economy of language, economy of image, it was only a short amount of time we felt invested in there, but like I felt like I learned so much about the character and his quote unquote origin just in that little bit of scene alone.
Yeah, it's true. And it was driving me crazy. Who is the actress playing Picard's mother?
Mm.
And I finally figured it out. If you've seen the HBO series Crashing with Pete Holmes.
Is that the Pete Holmes? Yeah.
Yeah. She is in the final season of that.
Oh, okay.
A very, very different character. She's not anybody's mom in that one. We'll just put it that way.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. Okay. That's fun to always point out, like, oh, yeah, what's one of those people? Especially, like, she didn't have any makeup or prosthetic or anything on her. So you were able to do a direct one-to-one facial analysis.
Yeah, and especially when it's such a different character. Because sometimes it's like you have certain actors that you're, hey, it's that guy, but he's always, like, somebody's dad or, like, mm-hmm. a cop or... This time it's like this is a completely different human being, and the range is pretty impressive.
And what I liked about it as well is, you know, we had spent, what, I think 3 episodes last season with Picard at the Vineyards before he ends up taking off to do all the fun stuff that he did in season 1. And I feel like this did a better job of really grounding us in that place. Again, I don't mm-hmm. know how long we're going to be here for, but I like the fact that, you know, Picard stayed on his family's vineyard for a reason, and that there is this, like, inherent sense of history built in down to this very specific room that really served as, like, a source of comfort and a distraction for Jean-Luc Picard that I just thought was a really great way to unlock a part of the character that, even after decades and decades, we knew very little about.
Yeah, you don't know much about Vineyard Picard pretty much ever. Like, you get that one episode where he goes back to heal after the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it actually makes a lot of sense that he's going to keep coming back to this after what happened to him last season.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, too, of just like the let me ground myself, you know, almost connect in a manner of speaking, since he is android like of like, let me mm-hmm. reboot, recharge in a manner of speaking. And then that interesting connects back to something like the Stargazer, right, which they talk about in the beginning of TNG was sort of like on paper this big heroic maneuver, sort of like a big battlefield last stand approach, but he had been sort of harboring some of his own, I don't want to say like survivor's guilt, but like certainly I don't think he regarded that as a great day. Or he's even attached odd things to it, like that was the ship that Jack Crusher was lost on, speaking of Beverly. And so I do like if we have this Nexus event, in a lack of a manner of speaking, as okay, how do we avoid, you know, the source code-esque idea, live, die, repeat, mm-hmm. of how do we avoid the Borg Queen blowing up the Stargazer and, like, essentially inseminating itself throughout the universe? If we keep coming back to this, for this to be aboard the Stargazer, which in and of itself represents sort of the duality of Picard, of being portrayed as this heroic figure, but also containing a lot of multifaceted cracks in the armor, I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's absolutely a cool idea. And I'm jumping around a lot, but I really loved, like, oh, it's the Borg. And Seven is just like, do not let them, like, hang up, leave them on red.
Yeah.
Ignore them. Don't pick up. And they're like, oh, but we have to help them. They want to join the Federation. They do not want to join the Federation. I know these guys. Don't fall for it. Don't get sucked in. And then she turns out to be absolutely right.
Yeah, I absolutely love that as well. We can definitely get into it more with Seven, but it's one of these classic Star Trek-isms, right? Where mm-hmm. here's a central conceit and a conflict. The characters are going to approach it from various angles based on who they are. And Seven of Nine is like, I was a Borg. Do not talk to the Borg. Once you give them an inch, they're going to take a freaking light year and they're going to invade. At the very least, we could go to sleep knowing that we blew up an innocent Borg, not cube. At the very worst, we just prevented a mass genocide from happening. So, like, I'd like to take my chances here. I completely agree. I think she was by far not only the right voice in the room, but, like, the person you should listen to out of everybody.
Yeah. And nobody listens to her. And look where that got them.
Yeah. So let's get back to the captain of the Stargazer in Rios. So I guess starting with Rios, obviously, he had that whole tragic backstory, right, where he was part of a crew very close with a captain who, like, essentially got killed because he had gotten too close to the android synth information. Did you like that he eventually got back on the path and became a captain? What do you think of his captaincy in the small amount of time that we saw?
Why? What is there for him? Why would he ever want to do this? He hated everything to do with Starfleet last season. This is so inexplicable to me. Like, why, dude? Why? They abused you. They you know, they basically threw you out in disgrace. Why are you letting that happen? Like, why are you forgiving them?
That's a good question. I mean, there is the thing where, like, he had his com badge still in his little box of tchotchkes that he sort of ruminated over last season. Maybe his heart was still there. It is tough to devote yourself to something and then just trying to, like, inextricably pull it out without amassing any sort of wear and tear. But at the same time, I do feel like it wasn't done any favors with the time jump, right? That we didn't get to see any of this emotional advancement of him being like, should I go back? I don't know. And then him eventually coming back. Now, look, he certainly had his swagger, right? He had the Riker lean going on. He still has the inexplicable cigar that he is smoking, despite the fact that this is a future where you can, I'm assuming there's no tobacco in that, and that you can cure any sort of health malady that you can have, most of them. So I guess it's more so from an aesthetic purpose. But from the small amount, he at least seems to, like, have a good lay of the land when it comes to manning this vessel. I do not think he was recently placed on the Stargazer, is my assumption.
No, which makes it even more inexplicable. I think he would need some time to sit with that decision. But no, he just rolled right back into it. And, you know, he's a good captain. We've seen him be a good leader, but also the only people he was captaining were himself as holograms. So I guess a bigger challenge. I would like to see him feel a little more challenged by the current position.
Right, and we got that, again, a smidge once everything happens with the Borg, but that became much more about everyone, to your point before, yeah, than it was about, okay, this is Rios as the captain. So I feel like Dr. Girardi was one of the more nebulous people that we found back here. Like, she's with Soji, who is a diplomat. I'm not sure if she's there on official Starfleet relations. Is she just kind of like a come-with person? Clearly she's not in the brig. But, like, what is she doing? Is it that Soji, because she's an android, she's, like, consulting with her because she is now, I think, the last currently alive expert on androids at this point?
Yeah, I think I would guess that, you know, you can make androids legal, but you need people to sit with the decision and, like, feel okay about androids because there's going to be a lot of prejudice out there. You probably need her to help out with some diplomacy here. You need, like, hey, I'm a human. I hang out with this android all the time. She's cool. She's one of us. And that could be, or it's also like you probably just want your best mechanic around when you're driving the nice car.
That's a good point. Now, that being said, she's got a relatively cushy job. Seems like Soji is doing some fantastic diplomatic work, and she gets to hang back at the open bar and just, like, get shit-faced the entire time.
I mean, who among us, Mike?
Yeah, exactly.
It looks fun, and they throw some good parties, these people she's being diplomatic with.
I'm pretty sure they're Deltons, I think. I think this is like the modern-day Star Trek take on Deltons.
Deltons. Oh, yeah, well, were they all bald?
They were all bald, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then they're definitely Deltons. That's what Deltons do.
That's what Deltons do. Nary a hair upon them. We can briefly dote on Soji as well. I am really intrigued to see the role that she plays, because I don't know if the assumption is, again, we'll talk about this at the end with, like, Q's proposal, if it's like, okay, everyone on that ship gets involved sort of in the time loop or alternate universe thing going on. Soji wasn't a part of that. We've experienced this with Discovery, where characters are being written off the show despite having starring roles prior. I don't know if they're doing that with Issa Briones. She has been in the preview, but I have no earthly idea what they're going to do with her this season, unless she is also part of Picard's crew that is now trying to figure out how to live in 2024 or whatever they're going back to.
Well, you know, if it's Q that's moving them all around, I'm pretty sure Q's just going to throw her on there.
Yeah, and that would be
You'll
interesting.
Find a reason.
We saw that with Delta a bit, not Delta, Data, back during, like, the, what, Time's Arrow, I think it is, the Mark Twain episode where he goes back to the 1800s. They love to talk about androids being out of their time.
Yeah. Yeah, and Q loves to, like, Q's going to have a checklist. He's going to be like, what is going to F with Picard the most? And, you know, he just had this huge adventure. He needs all of these people. He needs this entire Scooby gang back together, and I'll make it happen.
Do you think Issa Briones will play more than one character this season, or do you think she is just playing the one Soji?
I think she's just the one Soji. I think we have already kind of established that there's just one of them. Even even though they were trying to make more of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say one person who I think we are going to see is I did catch a Brent Spiner appearance. I think we're seeing I think we're seeing Aesung. I don't think we're obviously seeing Noonien Soong because he was a shriveled up guy by the time we saw him in TNG, but I would imagine we're going to experience like maybe the top of the Soong family tree.
Right. We're going to see it's a human. It's definitely not an android.
Yes.
Did we ever figure out? I think we talked about this last season, and I don't remember where we left it. Did we ever figure out what happened to Lore?
No, because the way that the show left it with Lore, the lore around Lore, was that there was an entire plot line where he had sort of commandeered some of the X-Borgs. That was like a big cliffhanger from, I think, season 6 into 7. And it ended essentially with Data being like, they captured Lore, like they used Hugh to reclaim everything. And I think Data took Lore's head and was like, basically like, okay, let me into this closed room. I'm going to kill my brother. And that's the last we saw of him. So it could be something like if they certainly want to bring back Lore, it is out there. That being said, I think the ceremonious way they ended Data in the season finale last time, I think they are done with putting Brent Spiner in that yellow skin and those contacts anytime soon.
I mean, if I was him, I'd make that a condition of coming back. It's like you can play Soongs for days. You don't need to have Data.
Yeah, can I just point you to all the Twitter comments that they said about me when they first saw me in the teaser? We're not doing this anymore, people, okay?
Yeah, that's enough of that.
So let's talk about, I mean, I would say when we're talking about the pairing of Seven of Nine and Raffi is sort of like, fine. Again, she got reinstituted as a member of Starfleet. Seems like she and Seven sort of broke it off because they were off doing different things. But Seven of Nine, you spoke about it before, seems to be the one still on her game with the Fenris Rangers, you know, still doing things kind of in the moral gray areas of the law. She's staving off pirates. Seems like Rios has now gave her La Serena, like that is her ship now. What did you think about the choice to combine all the holograms into one central Emmett?
Well, there was one thing I liked about it, but I found it deeply disappointing because the multiple Rioses of it all was one of my favorite recurring gags of last season. Like, what accent is he going to have this time, and what is that guy's job? That was my favorite. So I don't like that we, you know, made them all into, like, one giant Acura of Rios's. But one thing I did like is, and this is something that I make fun of in Star Wars a lot. Like, you know how R2-D2 will beep at you, or Chewbacca will yell at you, and then you just respond in, like, perfect English?
Yeah.
I loved that. I love when they do that, and they did it here. You have Emmett speaking Spanish, and you have Seven just responding to him in English. And it's like, that's how universal translators can work. Like, you can hear people speaking English and respond in English, or you can have, like, people can just continue to speak and you can understand it.
Yeah.
And I really love, the more I see of that, the more it entertains me.
Yeah, of all the personalities that they merged into, I'm glad it was Emmett, which I believe was the tactical hologram last time, the sort of like surly kind of like down low Spanish speaking hologram. I do agree, though. I mean, I guess this sort of symbolizes that we're not spending a lot of time here, but one of the highlights definitely of Star Trek Picard Season 1 for me was the Rios holograms, with this idea that he reprogrammed all the holograms to look like him. There was the infamous scene where Raffi gets a council of Rioses together to be like, okay, what's wrong with Rios? You know this guy best. Break it down. So, I mean, Santiago Cabrera, look, he's gainfully employed on this show. He'll certainly have things to do, but I will miss essentially his, like, actor's reel of all the accents he can do.
Yeah, I mean, he was practically up to Tatiana Maslany levels of convincing characters in a season. I do like that that Seven gets the ship and she gets the hologram with the ship, because there's a lot of precedent for Seven being able to relate to a hologram more than a human. So if she's getting a partner out of all of this, I think he's the logical one for her to work with. But again, this is one of those things, like, I opened my email and it says, Seven and Raffi have ended their relationship. Seven has changed her relationship status to single. And we got nothing about it. And I guess we didn't get very much of it.
Yep.
Like, there was like a 1 second shot and everybody went nuts. So I guess it's like, oh, maybe they held hands for one day and then decided not to do that anymore. And we don't need the explanation. But I think they went so far to establish it as canon and then didn't do anything with it is disappointing.
Yeah. So there is, I believe, like an audio drama, which I have not listened to, but there is something that was done that had a Raffi 7 of 9 sort of adventure together. But again, it's not necessarily something featured on the show, so I don't know how many people checked it out. If it's something that does interest you, be sure to check it out. Outside of that, you are completely valid, Jess. There was one shot of them sitting at the table holding hands. And I remember at the time, we're like, what? Where did that come from? Like, because they had been entirely separate, right? 7 of 9 was with La Serena for a little bit of time, but like Raffi had her own concerns that she was dealing with. So this absolutely blindsided us. And then we were blindsided again by being taken out of it of, okay, I guess maybe it was just like a one night stand sort of fling, knocking Starfleet boots, but maybe not. I guess, you know, as we sort of segue out of our main cast here, Jess, and more so into the Star Trek faces that have popped up of old, let's make a bet here. How many between Picard and Laris, Jurati and Rios, and Raffi and Seven, of those three couples, how many will be together by the end of season two?
I'm going with the under. I'm taking zero.
Zero. Wow.
I think some of these people may end up in relationships with other people, but I think two of these three couples, insofar as there were couples, made zero sense when they happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they either have to go back and explain all of that or just like send them off to mingle with others. And I think Picard and Laris, the show has been very clear on what is happening with that, but that Picard is seemingly receptive to it signals that he will find someone. They either have to do a lot more work with Laris to get us there, or they have to bring someone in that makes sense to be with Picard. But I don't see any of these people actually being together.
Interesting. I'm going to say two. I'm going to go the 66.667% here. I do think they're going to do Picard and Laris. I'm going to go back to what you said before about how I do think the season's going to end right where he's going to have that, like, grass is always greener, don't know what you've got till it's gone thing, where he's like, you know what? Seize the day. Come here, sweetie. Smooch, 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 smooch. at the very end, where he realizes that maybe he should open up his artificial heart and embrace it when it's knocking at his door. And I'm going to say, I think Raffi and Seven are going to get back together. I think Jurios are going to stay apart because I very much think, to your point, that was more of an opposites attract thing where she was kind of like this tightly wound cyberneticist and he was this sort of Han Solo-esque, swaggery, brooding Starfleet captain. That it was very much to me like, why would these relationships ever work out? From a TV perspective, you know, of like, I don't know why these characters got together in the first place. They clearly weren't ever going to work. Really like a Rachel and Joey type of thing.
Yeah.
I would imagine why they don't pursue it that. But Star Trek, you know, likes to be progressive. We love it. They have a very great same-sex couple on Discovery in the form of Stamets and Culber. I could see it here where they're like, listen, people really reacted to Seven and Raffi. I think we keep them separated for a little while, but we're going to bring them back together and spawn another million fan fictions.
No, I want to be clear, Mike. I don't think that none of them getting back together and being back together at the end of the season, I think those are two different things. Mm. Getting back together, do I think boots might get knocked? Possibly. Especially if it's somebody like the Jurati Rio situation, which didn't make any sense, but it was like they just collided because they were so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you get a lot of your ex hookups. Like you get back together because you don't understand why you were together in the first place, but you still kind of want it.
Yeah.
And I think both of these couples that you speak of have that potential.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I was trying to like find my little golden ring of a pop culture comparison. Jurati and Rios was Claire and Bender from The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, yep. That's absolutely who they are.
And I'm sure that Allison Pill would say she's much more of an Allison Sheedy, but I think just the way the characters were personified and the inexplicability of them getting together very much was that. And I think much of the Breakfast Club discourse also has been like, I don't know if they'd stay together. I don't think they say any of the couples would stay together, considering how much Ally Sheedy had to make herself over to appeal to that Estevez.
Yeah, I mean, it could be more of a. No, it's definitely Bender and Claire. I was going to make the case for it to be a Shidi Estevez situation, but I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that particularly Rios is more of a Bender than he is whatever Emilio Estevez's character's name is. So let's get into some old faces popping up, which, like you said, like, it's the reason for the season, right?
Yes.
I'd seen some discourse on this from Ethan, actually, who was like, I got in an argument from my coworker where the coworker was saying that, you know, it was lazy for them to go back to the Borg for enemies. But I'll continue to underline this point that you made, Jess, like the entire onus of the series to be like, hey, remember how cool Jean-Luc Picard is? Don't you want to see him back and doing fun things? And I'm glad that they have not gone fully callback and just had essentially TNG 2.0. But the fact of the matter is, I'm actually surprised we held off on bringing in people like the Borg and Q until season two, considering how synonymous they are with Jean-Luc Picard proper.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit odd, but we had enough to pack into season one.
Oh yeah.
It is weird that with all of the like back and forth with flashbacks and moving around and with time and thinking about everything that's happened in the meantime, it's weird that Q wasn't his guide through that. Like, in fact, I think, didn't we point out at the time, the scene where Picard is talking to Data in the vineyard,
mm-hmm.
we're like, doesn't that make more sense for that to be Q?
Mm.
And then, of course, with the whole season being about androids, it really didn't. But it relied too much on that visual of him in the vineyard in the finale of TNG that we couldn't help but call back to it. So you also, I really feel like you had to have Q in there somewhere. This series doesn't work without Q.
No. And John DeLancey just has such a great dynamic with Patrick Stewart. I know he did it once, but it really just is a continual facepalm of him coming in and just needling Picard and Picard basically blowing up at him. It's very much Dennis the Menace and Mr. Wilson, with Q just usually ruining his day. Sometimes it's like bringing the Borg into his life. Sometimes it's putting them in a Robin Hood situation, and then everything in between. I guess before we get to Q, though, I guess let's go in order of the cameos here. Like I mentioned before, let's start here with Guinan. You know, the return of Whoopi Goldberg to the big ol' hat. Seems like she has now settled down on Earth. I would imagine that she's not with the Enterprise. I don't know, probably H at this point, however many times it's blown up or something. What did you think about the return of Whoopi? I know that obviously Whoopi Goldberg might be viewed in a different light due to recent circumstances, but trying to view it objectively from the scene between Guinan and Picard, what's your take on it?
Yeah, we can divorce the topic of Whoopi's return from Guinan's return.
Mm-hmm.
Although, who would you possibly get? Like, if you recast Guinan, could you do it?
I don't think so. Because that's the other thing is that, like, Guinan's not a shapeshifter, right? It can't be like, right. Oh, I changed my face. It's more so that she can choose whether or not she wants to look older or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, or she could say, like, could Guinan get work done? Like, you know, she can't do it to herself, but could she, like, you know, could she, like, go in for a little brow lift?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would imagine so. Though I also wonder, in the 2400s, like, what is the status of cosmetic surgery? Because obviously, you're not going under the knife. It's not going to be that insensitive. But, like, could you just, you know, do a hypo spray and, like, the bones in your face change to give yourself bigger cheekbones? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I think you must be able to do that. And there must be, like, again, we don't spend enough time outside of Starfleet because, you know, they're not doing it in Starfleet.
No.
But you know there's some Ferengi out there that have some, like, questionable filler injections.
Oh, yeah. Like, don't even question what's inside of it. It's all Yamek sauce. Don't worry. It's fine, though. It's going to, like, give you the best, you know, wrinkles that you've ever seen in your life. So, yeah, here's Guinan just sort of, like, hanging out. You know, she's a race that has been displaced, and now she has been displaced into her own little hole in the wall where she meets Picard.
Yeah. Yeah. That bar, like, he's going to be right at home going back to 2024 if he's at home in that bar.
Exactly. Like, I have probably seen several versions of that in the East Village during the time that I lived in New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like every bar that I went to in my 20s.
Yeah. So that being said, like the onus of the conversation is really Guinan sort of affirming to him that you never really opened your heart up. Like, I know you. I mean, again, for the valid comments that you might make about the aspects of the Picard romance story, this did really remind me of those fantastic times back in TNG. Because Guinan is playing that sort of Isaac the bartender role, right, back at 10 Forward. She Deep was... Pull. Yeah, she was this source of wisdom. Her race, the Elorot, Elorian, are a race of listeners. That's what they call themselves. And so I think it just was old times that Picard sits down, and it would make sense that he would also go to Guinan, especially if he knew that she was stationed on Earth, to be like, I need advice. What should I do?
I mean, who else is he going to go to for relationship advice? You know, I'm not going to Riker.
Yeah, like Riker, maybe like latter day Riker, but like former day Riker. Yeah, I don't know.
I still feel like Riker would be like Picard would lay it all out, and Riker would be like, "No, you got to go hit that." Like, yeah, that's just Riker.
And then, I don't know. Like, are you asking Geordi? And Geordi's like, "Well, have you made a hologram of Laris and fallen in love with that?" If you ask Worf, is he like, oh, doesn't is she dead? Yeah, she'll probably be dead in a few minutes anyway. That happens to anyone that I get with.
Yeah. Yeah, Worf is not going to be good relationship advice either.
You know what he should ask? He should ask Chief O'Brien, because Chief O'Brien has a very, like, sound marriage amidst some very extreme circumstances.
Yeah, that's definitely the person in the Star Trek universe who's got it figured out the most.
Yeah, though who knows? I would love to find out what Miles O'Brien is doing, you know, years and years after Deep Space Nine.
That's a good question. I think because I'm trying to remember what they did at the end of Deep Space Nine. They left the station, didn't they?
They left the station. I don't remember where him and the O'Brien family went. I would imagine like, oh, he'll just go hang out with Bashir. But Bashir went off with Dax. So yeah. I would imagine they're sort of doing their own thing.
Yeah, Bashir. Now, there's someone you don't want to ask for relationship advice.
Oh, no. Yeah. Have you tried like smelling her?
Yeah. You know, nice guys just don't get enough love in this world.
Exactly. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Bashir's like settled down with Garrick at this point, and he's like, they're knitting sweaters together, and he's like, find your true consonant in this world.
There's that too.
Yeah. So that being said, like, I really like the dynamic. Take or leave, I think, the actual dialogue, but it was just really nice to see these two actors talking together and bringing back that familiar relationship that was really the anchor of some of the most interesting episodes of TNG.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was... We had this checklist of like, who do we need to see? Like, who is the most likely person to show back up in this universe? I think we've seen a lot of them. Like, there's still, of course, there's characters we want to see, but this is one that it makes sense for her to be in this universe.
So that being said, let's get to at least the nemesis in this particular moment. Again, we don't know who the big bads might be of season two, if there are some. But we got to talk about the aforementioned return of the Borg. And in particular, let's talk about facelifts, a new look for the Borg Queen, complete with like Dr. Octopus tentacles.
Yeah, they definitely they've assimilated some good stuff since we last saw them.
Absolutely. Like, they're staying with the times. They have the power of the sun and many more things that, I mean, when she first appeared, obviously, I think one of the reasons why they did the whole media res thing in the very first scene was that so when this sort of like hooded figure appeared in front of us, we knew that it was the Borg Queen, because otherwise I'm like, who the hell is this? Is this going to be another Red Angel situation? But no, it was very much just like a hooded Borg Queen just flat out sticking her various USB drives into all the technology in the Stargazer to sap it up.
Yeah, well, I have two thoughts on that. One, they clearly assimilated some people that were good at fashion. Mm. And I feel bad for Garrick if it was him.
Oh, no. Bashir's a poor widower.
Yeah. Well, they probably got him, too. But we'll have to wait and see if they get whiny about anything. And two, they were not putting their appendages in any of the people.
Yeah.
I don't understand what is up with this. I want power. I want power. It's like you really didn't. You didn't assimilate anybody that's all about green energy. Like, you don't have any reactors anywhere?
It's a good point. Well, because there also is this now increasing confusion of, as we mentioned before, this distress call, right? Where they're specifically calling for Picard, and he comes there, and they initially take it as, like, a help us Picard. Okay, they want to become part of this. I mean, I guess it should be noted that the Borg ship does look different, right? It is not cube-like in nature, so maybe this does indeed represent almost like a ship full of hues of, okay, we're different from our families. You know, we want to break out of this. But yeah, interesting choice that their blows on the crew of the Stargazer were not lethal, that they were just stunning them, that they truly were just popping in to sap everything. And then from that capacity, like, I don't know, did they act too rashly by blowing up the ship and themselves inside if they were just coming by to get some of that tech?
Yeah, but this is something you need to have a conversation. Like, mm-hmm. You can't just come onto the ship and start, like, sticking your tentacles and everything.
There's like, etiquette to this, please.
Yeah, like, don't just send a help us Picard, and when Picard gets there, you're like, oh, good, jam, 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 jam. I mean, explain something. Like, this is what I hate about all of television. People just need to sit down and have a conversation, and there won't be a problem.
Mm-hmm. That is a good point. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure if I remember the course of events correctly, like, they show up, and then as soon as they do, essentially, like, they get hit by a blast from the ship. They're like, yeah. Oh, okay, clearly they're attacking. Now, I would imagine that maybe as soon as next episode, we're going to find out some sort of rationale behind what's happening, but it's just oddly incongruous that they do that, but then someone beams on but still, like, does not aim to kill, considering that the Borg are some of the most lethal villains in Star Trek history.
Right. And the only reason that we're not finding that out is because it will be more entertaining to find it out in the next episode. Like, Borg Queen should have just shown up and been like, hey, guys, we ran out of juice. Can I borrow some batteries?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, here's a cup of batteries. Godspeed. But no, it's the Borg, so we gotta make it scary.
So we did note that the Borg Queen, who is played by a different actress, by the way, because I believe Alice Krige played it in both Voyager and I think maybe in First Contact.
Yeah, that was her in First Contact.
But this is played by Annie Wershing. She does say, look up Jean-Luc, which we know is one of the things that his mother told him, which I guess begs the question, like, is this time travel? Is this a Q thing where, like, he is, again, trying to set things up a little bit and he's trying to play with Picard here?
It could be a Q thing. Like, this whole thing could be a Q thing
because
it's very different. It's like somebody writing fan fiction where it's like, well, it's the Borg, but it's not the Borg because they don't have a cube, okay? And, you know, it looks just like the Borg Queen, but it's not the same actress. So she's a little bit different. And then she wants to talk only to Jean-Luc, but we can't say why. This is like, Q is writing fan fiction. Like, none of this exists. None of this happened. Q is just like, well, let's get Jean-Luc's attention.
Well, that being said, let's cut to where things end. And obviously this was a huge part of the trailer. Selfishly, I kind of hope they pulled, like, I wish they had pulled a Hawkeye and, like, dropped both two episodes at once, because now I'm like, I want to find out what the actual season is about now. But the taste that we get here is that Jean-Luc Picard wakes up in the chalet the chateau in a very different environment, right? Like, he is wearing a very different uniform. He has a self-portrait on the wall that is him donning something that looks very different. Obviously, I think the big thing to take away is that he has a synth servant now, one of the ones that we saw on Mars, who was programmed to essentially commit murder en masse. And Laris is gone at this point, I guess replaced by the synth. And then here is Q, and I love the excuse, much like they did with Guinan, right? Of like, how can we explain aging amongst these ageless characters, that Q is kind of trolling Picard and being like, you look old, so I'm going to look old too. But,
well, that's also kind of like, didn't they do that in the Terminator movies too?
Yeah, that's very, of like, I wanted to blend in naturally, so now I also age at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously, again, it's very short shrift. He talks about, my friend, welcome to the very end of the road not taken, but this is the time for rampant speculation, Jess. What do you think is happening here? Is this another take on Tapestry of Jean-Luc Picard? This is how one path of your life went. Here's another one that you can explore. Is this Q trying to, like, give them something to do to save the universe? Where do you think we're going right now?
Well, it feels to me like, well, first of all, the fact that they're sending them back to basically our time and Q is calling it punishment, that feels very, I feel personally attacked and also, yeah, accurate.
yeah, good point.
Good point. Like, the only thing that could have been worse, like, they just take them back to 2020 and they're all in lockdown and they can't do anything.
Yeah, like, what, Q, what do you want us to do? I have to sit in my home and mix sourdough the entire time.
Yeah. But I think there's always, like, there's always some kind of test with Q. He's putting them through some kind of trial. And it's weird that we're going back to that. I think it's almost like we can't think of anything else for Q to do. So we're going to have them go through another trial, even though I feel like he put them through a pretty big trial. Like, that was all of TNG was Q putting people on trial. And there needs to be a new spin on it in order for this season to be effective.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the series began and ended with a trial. He did end the series by saying the trial never ends. So maybe this is just an open invitation for him to keep coming in. He did not wear the full judge regalia, at least not yet. Maybe we'll see that in episode 2. Yeah, if I could imagine something with this being modern day Star Trek, where every season there is something that is going to end the universe that they have to stop, I think there is some sort of big cataclysmic event that happened, like, on that day, right? Like, this is the day that history changed forever.
Well, it could be the Mars thing.
Yeah, like the Mars thing. And then, essentially, you know, Q is going to say, like, maybe this is an idea of, like, the multiverse is shifting a bit now. Maybe, you know what it could be, honestly? Maybe the Borg that came over were a Borg from a different universe.
That's true. Could be mirror universe Borg. Like, everybody that gets assimilated has a beard. Oh, by the way, Mike, did you throw things at the screen like I threw things at the screen when they're like, hey, our big bad this week is a big spatial anomaly? I'm like, no, I'm done with,
stop
no,
it. I don't want to keep looking at holes in space. Please get me away from anomalies for like a hot second. Take me back to 2024, please. Yeah, the more that I think about it, the more that it makes sense, right? Like, now I'm thinking about it could be, and maybe it's just because I have like Spider-Man No Way Home on the brain, right? This idea of, maybe there is a rift in the multiverse that is, like, tearing the fabric of the universe apart. And so Q is like, okay, I'm going to send you back, like, almost through the multiverse to be able to stop something. And maybe that multiverse is, like, a universe that is much more like our time. Maybe it's one where Seven of Nine is no longer a Borg. If we're sort of doing Sliders Star Trek edition, I would love that.
Yeah, it might be all right. 2024 is very specific because of the Bell riots. I wonder if we're getting any Bell riots content.
Would be real. I would imagine so. Like, I think you gotta be in San Francisco, right? If you're traveling back in Star Trek times.
Yeah, they always go to San Francisco. And I would think that they're not just going to pick that date out of thin air. If they were going to pick a date out of thin air, they'd just do like Voyage Home and just send them back to this year.
Yeah, exactly. And then there are so many like quadruple dumbasses at this point in time. But yeah, this could very well be a thing of, okay, you're going on like time heist because this particular person at this particular time was the, you know, the butterfly that caused the winds to blow on that very day. That is probably the most likely scenario. Or it could just be multiverse. It could just be Q being like, you have to hop around all these times to essentially figure out what's brought everything in disarray and try to get everything together. Because it does seem like from what Picard is alluding to in those previews, right? It's very much like the fabric of the universe is being destroyed. We have to save it. That clearly something must be happening that only they can fix.
Yeah. And I get a little tired. Like, you know how I feel about, you are the only people in the universe who can fix this thing. Mm-hmm. I've gotten very, very, very tired of that.
Yeah. I mean, this might just be the case because, like, Picard is one of the people that Q can go to. Though, yeah. I mean, listen, Q has worked with Sisko. Q has worked with Janeway. There are other options, presumably. But I would imagine he's like, don't worry, I have a guy. And it's like, Picard, get a crew of people together. And get your best people on board. You're going to try to help save the space-time continuum.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the fact that Q has chosen Picard to pick on for this many years at least gives it a reason for Picard to be the person that does the thing. Mm-hmm. And at least there are not 10 different people in this gang that are all the best person in the world for this particular job. I feel like we have a little bit more wiggle room than that with this particular group of people. So it's not exactly a one-to-one Disco situation, but I'm going to be very interested to see what is Q doing with them this time. And I hope if he does something really tired that we've already seen, I hope somebody calls him out on it.
Mm-hmm. I would love that too. Yeah. Hopefully the writers have enough wherewithal to be like, we've done this before. In fact, I would not be surprised if, you know, one of the first conversations Picard has with Q when we follow up in episode two is like, what, are you going to send me back to, you know, a pivotal moment in my life again? Are you going to try to set me up in another romantic situation? Like, what are you doing this time, Q? That really just lampshades all the other things they've done with Q to make this time different. So again, to overall, like, encapsulate my own thoughts about this, it was not, I would say, a perfect premiere, but I just had a great vibey time getting back with these characters. There are several questions as to why these characters made the choices that they did to get to this place, but I think it really helps me that assumingly we're just going to move on from this and we don't need to dote on it necessarily, which makes me excited. I have no idea where we're going at this point, but the stability with which these characters have, and especially the performers have with these characters, and especially like the distinct personalities that they all have as well, which again might be lacking in something like Star Trek Discovery when it comes to certain conflicts, I think we're in good hands. It was an odd but fun start, and I'm excited to see where it goes personally.
Yeah, I think we've said this about many shows in the past, Mike, mm-hmm. but I think I'd co-sign that. I think the fact that we reached outside of Starfleet to get some of these characters together means we get a lot more room to have some really divergent personalities, like people that wouldn't make it into Starfleet. You might have some really good, interesting characters working on something that Starfleet would probably never condone most times.
Yeah. So next time you're going to hear from us talking Picard is if you haven't listened to our Disco coverage, essentially what Jess and I are doing is because, you know, there's a lot of Star Trek going on and we are two fairly regular individuals when it comes to our timeshare these days. We're essentially going to do a premiere recap like we just did right now. We're going to do like a mid-season check-in. So I think this is a 10-episode season. So around episode 5 or 6. And then we'll do a finale recap to sort of dote on everything that happened. So it's going to be about a month before we come back and talk about Picard. I'm really excited to come back, Jess, in April and be like, oh my God, I did not expect any of this foolishness to happen, but it did. And I'm excited. That being said, I mentioned Discovery. We're going to be back in a couple of weeks because that is rounding the corner. I still don't know why they did some overlap here, but I believe Star Trek Discovery has 2 episodes left. If you want to check it out, we do have recaps for the premiere and a mid-season catch-up there as well. Otherwise, Jess, what else do you have going on in the podcast atmosphere?
Well, Mike, you and I just wrapped up Amazing Race. Mm-hmm. We may have a few more surprises up our sleeve in that regard. But for now, I don't have anything on the books for that. But over here at Post Show Recaps, I'm doing Killing Eve with Josh Wigler and Brooklyn Zed. And then I'm also covering Walking Dead, per usual. And I have the usual panel of AJ Mass, Chappelle, Josh Wigler, and myself. And we are covering all things Walking Dead until one or more of us gets bored with all of the spinoffs. They just announced another spinoff today, Mike.
What? Another one?
Yeah, another one. And it's the dumbest premise I've ever heard. So I can't decide whether I'm out on it or I want to come and yell at it every week. So we'll see.
Wow. So it really is like a Hydra because the main show is dying, right? And we have now, by my count, what, 4 spinoffs at this point? 5, maybe?
Yeah, well, there's World Beyond, which ended.
Okay.
There's Walking Dead and Fear, which are still ongoing. Walking Dead's going to end. We get 2 spinoffs that were already announced and a 3rd spinoff. So yeah, we are at 5 spinoffs now.
Wild.
No Rick Grimes movie.
Wow. Oh, wow. That got canned. I didn't even realize that.
Well, I don't know if it got canned. We haven't heard anything about it in a really long time.
Mm-hmm. When is the time of The Walking Dead supposed to take place in?
It's supposed to take place in, it starts out in 2010.
Okay.
Like, when 2010-ish, when the zombie apocalypse started, but now we're up to about our time.
Yeah, so do you think there's a chance that if we do multiverse hopping, we might end up in a zombie version of the 2020/2010s on Star Trek Picard?
I would love it if they went back in time and it was like Walking Dead world.
Yeah, just imagine everyone in Starfleet uniforms be like, what do I do? How do I kill it? Just phaser it to the head.
Yeah, they just phaser everything to the head, and those things are rechargeable, so it's not like they're going to run out of bullets like they did on Walking Dead.
Yeah, or they might be like, oh yeah, zombieism was cured in 2207. Let me just do a little bit of a hypo spray and I'll be able to cure them of zombieitis.
How do we know he didn't invent it?
Exactly. So you can check out the stuff that I'm doing as well. Josh Regler and I are, of course, continuing our countdown of Down the Hatch. We are back this week with a supersized special in honor of Josh's birthday and taking a week off, covering 8 episodes there. Just finished, finally, after over a year, covering The X-Files with Angela Bloom. We did a little bit of, like, a wrap-up special where she essentially told me all the ridiculous things that happened after the series wrapped up in The X-Files universe. And then coming this Friday, I'll be doing daily coverage of Upload, which is an Amazon series with another Jess Sterling, a very fun Amazon Prime series. I think something that, like a Dr. Agnes Girardi would really enjoy, the idea of uploading your consciousness to an afterlife and seeing what would happen in there. It's a very different take on sci-fi, but very fun. We're doing daily coverage of that. And many other things going on in post-show recaps as well. The HBO lineup. I know that Batman coverage just came out for The Batman. Vikings Valhalla coverage came out as well. If you're thinking about a show, there's probably a chance there's some coverage of it on Post-Show Recap. So make sure you are subscribed to our Post-Show Recaps feed where anything and everything comes your way. If you have the means and the credits to do so, it is the beginning of March. You can become a member of the Post-Show Recaps patron program at patreon.com/postshowrecaps. At the $10 level, you will get access to a Discord where we, you know, had a Star Trek channel. That's maybe been a bit askewed due to inactivity, but we're still talking about it. If you have thoughts about that, whether past, present, or future, or like anything in general, there's a channel for that in the Post-Show Recaps patron Discord. So again, if you have the means to, I encourage you to become a patron, join us, assimilate, etc. And of course, follow us on social media at Haymaker Hattie for Jess, at A Mike Bloom Type for me, and of course, at Post-Show Recaps. So that's going to do it for our premiere coverage of Star Trek Picard. Next time you'll hear from Jess and I talking Star Trek is the season 4 finale of Star Trek Discovery. Then after that, we'll talk some more Picard as we check in mid-season. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper.